Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. There's often something refreshingly candid from retired politicians who are no longer in office or facing a race in the next election cycle. They tend to check their political affiliation at the door. We may have one of those interviews today, courtesy of two retired longtime members of Congress from Illinois who are part of the Congress to Campus program. They visited Viterbo University in La Crosse this week to talk politics with the students. Democratic Representative Bill Lipinski served in Congress for 22 years, and Republican Dennis Hastert served 20, including 8 years as Speaker of the House between Newt Gingrich and Nancy Pelosi. I asked the former speaker to talk about the history of the debt ceiling debate in Congress.
You know, the debt ceiling is something that's basically an artificial thing. Whatever you're doing, if you have good economic times, you have people earning money, you're paying into Social Security, paying into Medicare, and basically your debt rises sometimes faster when you're a good economy than when you have a bad economy, because all these things accrue and it's basically a debt. So every year you have an increase in the debt ceiling. Means what you owe ultimately out in the out years. But when the federal government also borrows money to basically fund government, because the revenue side of government is not, there's not enough revenue coming in to pay for the government that we have. So that in that situation, the debt goes up also. So the debt ceiling in this situation, members of Congress said, hey, this is a place where we can lay down the line, lay down our marker, because every year you have to, or every so often, you have to increase the debt ceiling. Now, a long time when a predecessor of mine was in charge of Congress, Dick Gephardt, something called the Gephardt Rule. If you pass the budget, you automatically pass the debt ceiling. So you didn't have to vote on it. It was just kind of an automatic thing. But if you want to have a fight, if you want to get to a point where you have a deadline or a drop dead thing, you don't pass the debt ceiling, and then there has to be negotiation to get it done. And I remember when I was a freshman in the Congress, and President Reagan was president. And so a number of freshmen on our side of the aisle decided that we weren't going to vote for the debt ceiling again. We enough of this debt stuff, and we shouldn't be borrowing money. And so I remember Bob Michael, his Republican leader, called us into his office, and we thought, well, this is probably a admonition from the leader. Well, a guy named Jim Baker was sitting there, who was Secretary of the Treasury at the time. And we're in this big, long meeting room and this long, big table. And he looks at us and says, well, you boys, what are you going to do when your constituents call you up next week and they're not getting their Social Security checks? Or, the doctors aren't getting their Medicare checks. When you guys stop government. And it kind of came a realization, this borrowing is really kind of part of the process. And I think we ended up probably voting for that bill back then. But, when you look at the debt that the federal government has today, and, we're speaking to the students at Viterbo University. Look in the faces of those kids that are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years of age. And basically when they're at their peak earning area, 25 or 30 years from now, they could be paying up to 70% of their income just in government taxes to pay down debt. And we don't want to get to that situation. We don't want to be, we need to make some changes now, in my opinion. And the only way you can start to make some changes is to draw some hard lines in the sand. And if you need things like the debt ceiling, crisis, and you're actually kind of creating a false crisis, but you do create that crisis and deadlines, that's the way you get things done, unfortunately. If you don't get it done, then government shuts down. Nobody wants to shut down government. So basically, that's what the whole debt ceiling fight was all about. And ironically, you haven't heard about it for 20 years before, because it just was kind of a non-issue.
And former Representative Bill Lipinski, I'm wondering if you can comment on the current debt issue and maybe what you would do differently.
Well, I don't know that I would do differently. It seems like when the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives, I usually voted to increase the debt ceiling. When the Republicans controlled it, I usually voted against it. And I think that 99.9% of the members who served in the House of Representatives would make the same statement to you. It was a very cheap political vote. when the other party was controlling the situation. So it wasn't really that important of an issue. The Republicans made it a very important issue this time around because they really had other concerns that they wanted to see be addressed. Now, I agree with Denny. We have too much debt. We borrow too much money. We must cut back on the programs we have. I also believe we need to increase taxes across the board. I'm still astonished at the fact that 50% of the working people in the United States do not pay any federal income tax. It's just amazing to me. Now, they pay Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid taxes, but not federal income tax. But I think we need to address the tax code and see to it that those people have some kind of investment. But we have this super committee set up. I don't believe the super committee can possibly come together because there are some people on there who will not vote for any tax increases. There are some people who will not do anything to reduce Medicare, Medicaid. Okay? So that means, unless Congress somehow manages to back off on it, and I don't think it will, that you're going to have across-the-board cut. Now, across-the-board cut isn't really the best way to go about reducing the budget of the United States government. But it seems to me, with the parties being as far apart as they are at the present time, it's the only hope that we have of getting some reduction in spending by the federal government. And I believe that we absolutely have to do that. We have to get it under control. The Democrats have to come to the realization that you're going to have to make some cutbacks in Medicare, Medicaid. Social Security is very easy to handle. There's no problem with Social Security at the present time. And I think the Republicans have to realize that you're going to have to increase taxes. You're going to have to, unfortunately, probably increase taxes on all Americans across the board. That's my feeling on the situation. I hope that the super committee comes to some ideas, but I don't think that they will. So we'll go with the across-the-board cut. I just hope there isn't any way that they can wiggle out of that. Okay, now I'm not there. I haven't read the fine print and what they passed, so I don't know. But I've seen things done in the House and the Senate that I would have believed would have been impossible. But when people didn't want to really take a stand on something, they managed to slide out of it. I hope they can't slide out of this.
Unfortunately, you can always change the law.
Right. Yeah. Right.
As you basically just said, I mean, the deficit issue has become a bit of a partisan issue. And the U.S. has been through some extraordinary times in the last 10 years. And rather than working together to solve some problems, many politicians are concerned with power and the next election. So what do you think it will do to change maybe that partisan attitude and for people to look ahead and to come together to work better?
Well,
Speaker Hastert.
It's kind of the nature of the place. You know, I'm very simplistic in laying this out. But, you know, there's a basic differences between Republicans and Democrats. And I said this, I don't think there's a lot of, you know, I'm trying to be as truthful as possible. But, you know, Democrats really believe in big government. They believe in big government because government's a safety net. And it helps people who are in trouble, people who don't have work, or people in the inner cities that are, you know, basically need help. And in order to have big government and more services for people, you have to higher taxes. And so that's a state of mind. I mean, it's a philosophy, a social conscience, more philosophy. Republicans, on the other hand, are basically, and you find, you know, the big Democrat strongholds are basically in the big cities, the Los Angeles and New York and Chicago and Buffalo and, you know, all across the country, in the cities. If you look where Republicans come from, and if you look at a map, the map is basically red, but it's out in places where there's not a lot of people. And basically, Republicans are kind of, I can make my decisions for myself. I don't need government to make decisions for me. And so they probably tend to believe in less government. And if you believe in less government, you also believe in less taxes because you don't need all that money for the federal government. You can do a better job of spending that money for yourself, investing that money, creating jobs than the federal government can. So basically, that's the fight that's in Congress all the time. So you take these two types of positions, and, you know, somebody believes strongly in big government and higher taxes, or somebody believes strongly in less government and lower taxes. That's where this whole battle. And something happened when Bill and I were in Congress. We passed against our votes, but passed a Feingold-McCain bill, or McCain-Fein bill, but basically took the money out of the parties. And when they took the money out of the parties, they pushed money into the extreme right and to the extreme left. So the people who are actually funding candidates today are more to the right wing and more to the left wing. And so you have the extremes coming to Congress instead of the middle coming to Congress. And when you have the extremes, it's very hard to find a middle way. You know, as Speaker, I spent most of my time trying to bring people who were moderates and people who were conservatives together to find the votes to move pieces of legislation forward. You know, and a lot of the times that I was Speaker, the 8 years I was Speaker, I only had a 5 or 6 vote margin. That's not many out of 435 members. I always said there were 3 different kinds of days in Congress. There were Tuesdays when you came and it was a day of impossible because this guy was staked out here and he couldn't vote for something. Somebody else was staked out there and he couldn't vote for something. And if you lost 5 votes, you couldn't move the legislation. I always said Wednesdays were meat grinder days when you actually brought people at the table trying to grind out agreements and listen to what people's problems were and try to fix those problems and move forward. And Thursdays were the days that you moved legislation. But, that was that way 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year or when you were in session and 8 years. So that was a pretty tough grind.
And Representative Lipinski?
I don't have an answer to that particular question. I frankly don't believe anyone has an answer at the present time to that question. Denny Hastert, when he was Speaker, I think tried to bring the Democrats and the Republicans in the House together on legislation. He's a very easy guy to get along with. He is a conservative, but he's a man that would disagree with you without being disagreeable. I think he worked very hard on trying to bring people together. It didn't happen. I'll tell you just one quick story to illustrate that. When I came to Congress, Tip O'Neill was the Speaker. Tip, every afternoon, 1 o'clock, 1:30, used to come out and sit down on the floor. Any member that wanted to talk to him, Democrat, Republican, could go up to him, talk to him. They had a problem. Tip would try to solve it for him. Tip believes the first duty of the Speaker was to protect the members, whether they were Democrats or Republicans. So he was there to help everybody. A lot of people took advantage of it. Next Speaker was Jim Wright, and he wasn't on the floor, and I was really surprised at that because I had only known Tip before that, and he was on the floor. Then Tom Foley, and he wasn't on the floor. And then we had Newt Gingrich, and he wasn't on the floor. And then we almost had Bob Livingston, but at the last minute he decided not to do it. Denny, when he became Speaker, wanted to reinstitute that. Denny did reinstitute that. Unfortunately, when he would come out and sit on the Democratic side, other than myself and maybe 1 or 2 other people from Illinois, wouldn't go and sit down and talk to him because our leadership by that time was so anti-anything the Republicans wanted to do that if you went and sat down in public with Denny, you were an outcast in the Democratic Party. Consequently, Denny stopped doing that because he was getting no place with it whatsoever. But that's how bad things had grown from the time Tip O'Neill was Speaker to the time that Denny Hastert was Speaker.
And to build on that, I quit doing that. But, if members wanted to come to see me, and we still had some of the most liberal members, they had to come in the back door where they weren't seen. And, we talked to them all the time. And, whether it was Bobby Rush down in his area to try to help him with a project he had or Jackson from Texas, who was kind of acerbic, but, she always was knocking on the door. She wanted something. But, you listen to everybody. One of the jobs of Speaker, you had to do 2 things. You had to have people's trust that you're going to be fair. You don't always agree with them, but you had to bring a method of fairness to the body. And you did represent all people. And example, we had a member from Louisiana who found during Hurricane Katrina, he was New Orleans, found $10,000 in his freezer, which ostensibly came from Nigeria as some kind of a payoff, but nobody knew. But the FBI came in and they wanted to raid his office. Well, what we did was we provided everything, computer records, all those types of things that they asked for. But they wanted to, and this was the Bush administration, they wanted to put on a show. So they told, it was when Congress wasn't in session at night, and they told the Capitol Police to stay out of our way and came in with a television crew and busted down the door and broke into this member's office. Well, it's against the law. I mean, it's absolutely against the law. It's also the constitutional separation of powers. Now, I had to go out and stick my neck out and support this person because his office was illegally broken into and make sure that his rights were held both as an individual and both as a congressman. I had great ridicule from my own party because what am I doing helping this Democrat? Well, I'm not helping him because he's a Democrat. I was helping him because, it was my responsibility to the institution. So, I mean, as a speaker, you get stuck out in some things, but you have to show that you're fair. And, I walk up on the Hill today, and Democrats have come up to me that served with me time and time again and say, look, we really appreciate the time you were there. You really did. We didn't always agree with you, but you were fair. And everybody had an honest chance to do what they wanted to do.
I used to go over and see Denny because we were working on the redistricting, him and I, and we were also working on the highway bill, and I used to go over and brief him on what was going on with the negotiations. A number of times I would go over there, and I would see Democrats sneaking out of the back door of his office, and when they would see me there, they would get very, very concerned that I was going to turn them into Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democratic police over there. But it's a terrible, unfortunate situation. But until we really start sending people who aren't Democrats or Republicans to Washington, people who are Americans first, I don't know how we are actually going to solve the problem. Now, we're going to solve a little bit of the problem with the super committee because they won't come to any agreement and we'll make these cross-the-board cuts. But where do we go from there? I personally think what we should do is we at one time had a base closing committee. All the military bases, there were so many of them, people had a vested interest in it, and we needed to close some of them. We set up a base closing committee, a bunch of well-respected individuals from the private sector, some former members. Alan Dixon was a member. In fact, I think you appointed Alan Dixon to that committee. And they were to come up with recommendations for base closings. And it came to the Congress, and all the Congress could do was vote it up or down. And that's the way we got rid of a lot of military bases that we didn't need. But if that had been left to the members of Congress to do, it would have never gotten done because no one was going to vote for closing a base in their district. And I could get, if Denny had one and I had one and four other guys from Illinois had them, well, you can rest assured we're not voting against our friends to close their bases. So maybe we need something like that to take care of the problems that we have because we must address Medicare, Medicaid. We have to solve that problem.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are retired Representative Bill Lipinski. He's a Democrat from Illinois who served from 1983 to 2005. We're also joined by former Representative and former Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. He's a Republican from Illinois. He served from 1987 to 2007 and for 8 years was Speaker of the House. Our next question comes from Brad Williams, a reporter from WISM Radio.
Gentlemen, one of the other problems of confidence that has come up in recent years is the low level of public esteem in Congress, at least what we get from the public opinion polls that's down in the same area as reporters, basically. Does that discourage you as people who have spent time in the Congress to see that the public does not seem to have confidence in how the Congress works?
It certainly disturbs me, and I believe it disturbs Denny, but I'll tell you what. I believe the biggest contributing factor to that is people in your profession. Fox News, MSNBC, liberal talk shows, conservative talk shows. You people manage to get headlines, to get recognized. You throw so much mud in behalf of one political party or the other. That's what helps destroy the confidence that the American people have in their elected officials. Now, not that the elected officials are perfect by any means whatsoever, but I really believe that if we could do something about toning down the oratory that is on radio, TV, and in the newspapers against whoever you're against. I mean, you listen to Fox News and you listen to MSNBC And you would think that they were talking about different countries, different planets, different worlds, different issues. It is absolutely unbelievable because I think it is such a great concern. I listen in the city of Chicago. We have a very liberal station that has every liberal commentator in the world on it. And, of course, we have Rush Limbaugh, and we have, Sean Hannity, okay, and there's a number of other people. I listen to them also. And I'll hear the same issue discussed by both sides, and I won't recognize it as the same issue. So that's the first step. The people in the media should tone down their highly partisan attitudes.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, people's public opinion comes from, quote unquote, the free press. And one of the things that we have in our Constitution was a guarantee of free press. So public opinion, ideas could be vetted out there, people's opinions. But, you know, today when you're have a 24-hour news cycle and there has to be news about something, you know, every 15 seconds. You know, these, especially cable, but other, you know, they're just, they demagogue these issues to death. Not only political issues, but other, you know, this trial or that trial. I mean, that's all you hear. You can't turn on the TV or the radio without listening to what the trial, somebody says about this trial or that trial. Just people are permeated with this mega news issue. And, you know, sometimes people ought to sit down and read a book and think about things and have some philosophical discussions. But that doesn't happen either. It's just all this. And I won't name names on Fox or other stations, but, you know, everybody knows who excites the public and who dishes this stuff up. And they have people that go out and research everything and try to find this glitch or that glitch. And it's what passes for news today. There needs to be a serious discourse in this country about issues, about politics, about philosophy, and people to sit down in some type of a reason. But that's not, you know, with our 30-second psychology anymore, that everything has to be an exploded issue of 30 seconds, and that's what time people have to digest it, and then you go on to something else.
Republican Dennis Hastert and Democrat Bill Lipinski are former representatives from Illinois. They visited Viterbo University this week as part of the Congress to Campus program, where former members of Congress talk to college students about politics. Coming up in the next half hour, more with the former Illinois congressman, including Dennis Hastert, on his legacy as House Speaker during the September 11th terrorist attacks. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.